The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Ali Renner and Stevie Nicol. Jan will be joining us a little later on, but there's really only one place to start today's show, and that is with Brentford's 4-0 mauling of Manchester United. All the goals are coming in the first half. Brentford were very good. Manchester United were very much the opposite of that. I tell you what, Stevie, wow.
You're watching it and you can't believe what you're watching.
No, and then it gets worse.
I mean, you know it's going to be tough. You know, Brentford at home, they're a big, physical, strong side that will get after you. And so you have to be ready for that challenge. And you've got to say, as individuals, not one of them was ready for that challenge. And I think you also have to look at Ten Hag and say, have you really done your homework? Mm. You've put out a team, particularly three players. Martinez, who's one of the smallest centre-backs in world football, mm-hmm. never mind in the Premier League. You're putting him against two guys in Mbeumo and Ivan Toney, who love a battle physically. They love the ball in the air. And then you look at the middle of the park. You've got Eriksen and Bruno Fernandes. And all you've got as a bit of muscle is Fred.
Right.
Okay. And you wonder why you're getting overrun.
You want to say that again? That the bit of muscle is...
Well, the bit of muscle is Fred.
Okay. Right.
And you wonder why you're getting overrun. So you've put a side out that's up against the basics of football. From when the game started, there's always been one rule. You have to win the right to play. And when you've got a team full of footballers, supposedly, the first thing they have to do is win the right. And they couldn't do it. And they didn't do it from the first minute to the last minute, and you end up losing because, yes, you're outplayed, outfought, you name it, and you also make so many individual mistakes, particularly the goalkeeper. So, just an absolute shocker.
And the most clear evidence of a team that is fragile is that when you give up these early goals, there was no sense of Manchester United coming together and rallying around a plan. Or, hey, look, okay, not a good start of the game, but let's make sure we get a couple of things right so that we build some momentum, so that we build some confidence. None of that. The team does not come together at all. They quickly, and I mean quickly, separated, right. Broke apart, said, Now you start worrying about what you do and your job and your assignments, and you're no longer concerned about the team concept, and that's why you see just guys running around without any sort of plan. That's scary, because that tells me that this is a team that has no belief whatsoever. And if that's the case, how do you get that back when you do not actually understand or believe or think or trust that you're good enough to compete against a team like Brentford?
Let's welcome in, shall we? Jan Arge Fjortoft is with us as well. Jan, how much do we blame Ten Hag? How much do we blame the players for today's performance?
And how much do we blame the club? I think this last week has been Manchester United as they are in 2022. They more or less lost 4-0 every day. In every department. I mean, they're looking for a striker that Arnautovic, that McLaren had at Twente like for 200 years ago. I mean, so let's put it this way, the club is rotten. I mean, sorry to say, and in all departments, concrete, Old Trafford, hole in the roof, it's terrible stadium, used to be the best stadium to come to. That's been said. The two last games, I mean, it's unbelievable. And I think that Al said it, play out from the back. I mean, it's unbelievable in the state pictures of the self-confidence of this team. So the players, we have to start with them. They have this idea. We have no confidence. We don't understand the pattern of the manager. What do we do? Okay, De Gea, who made a big mistake, tried to play Christian Eriksen the ball on 15 meters. And they scored a 2-0. That is a consequence of a lot of things. On the manager, I think that it's too early, of course, after two games. But there are some interesting thing. He put people out of positions. Afterwards, I think he is right to go at the players, because I think sometimes the players are hidden behind owners, managers, and so on. But still, this pre-season talking, pre-season means nothing. Pre-season is pre-season. So I think that for Manchester United fans to see what's going on at the club, it's scandalous. It's unbelievable. But I won't say Dan, in a long prologue now, is that I will also big respect to Brentford. Brentford winning 4-0. Manager Frank, fantastic job. Good. You see, like Brighton, you can see how they want to play. And coincidentally, the two games with Brighton and Brentford now, he's kind of shown that the pattern of Manchester United, they're not to be seen, because Frank and Potter has a great pattern they have managed to give the players.
Surely Ten Hag going to Brentford, and Jan's right, you've got to praise Brentford, but again, I'll say it, and I don't wish to disrespect them. You know what you're going to get. So surely if you're Ten Hag, you have some sort of plan where, right, if things are not going quite right, then we have to bunker in, we have to get tight, let's make them go around the outside, everybody just get compact, and then we get ourselves back into the game. There was nothing. And you look at the experience they had on the field, people like De Gea, Maguire, Ronaldo. I mean, and the manager sat on the bench and did absolutely zero.
But it's not his fault that De Gea threw it in, is it?
I'll tell you what's his fault, though. His fault is that when things are not going well,
right,
nobody had any sort of idea how to either bunker in or bring everybody together or just do something to
stop the bleeding, mate.
To stop the bleeding, to ride it out, so to speak. Nothing. That's down to the manager. And to sit there and not do anything until half time is wrong completely as well. So, yes, you have to look at the players. I think the biggest burden definitely is on the players.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, at the very least, you should have some heart and you should fight. But I'll tell you what, the manager didn't do too much to help them.
To your point, about the fight and of the players, or lack thereof, when you hear the Brentford players talking after the game, they talk about our priority was to work hard. We knew that working hard was going to be good enough for us to beat Manchester United. Working hard, good enough to beat Manchester United. Working hard should be the minimum,
right,
for any team. And yet, for Brentford, the players knew on the field, in looking at the Manchester United players, that if we just run, if we work hard, if we work together, we're going to be better than any of these guys, because they're not willing to do what we're willing to do. That's embarrassing.
Yeah, I think, and to make some facts on that, I saw the stats after the game. Not only did Manchester United lose 4-0, they had less tackles. They ran, Brentford ran a lot more than them. So all these things show that there is no passion, there is nothing in this team. And you just got a feeling that sometimes people are saying that a manager will lose the dressing room. I think Ten Hag hasn't been there long enough to lose it, but he hasn't won the dressing room yet. And when I had a look at this game today, I got a feeling, I've been in a situation as a player, when a player, it's like immunity, if that is the right word. It's like they wanted to be bad. Because if you see 1 to 11, starting 11, great players, you know they are sulky babies. They've been there all last season as well. But what they did at Brentford today, I'm not sure about the English word for it. It's like they went to strike. I think it's shocking to see.
Next up's Liverpool.
Uh-oh.
It's incredible, isn't it? Stevie, let's take a look at your player rating, shall we, for this.
I was generous.
God, the subs did well.
Well, because they drew 0-0 in the second half.
Hey!
So they absolutely made a huge difference in subs. You go 4-0 down and you draw 0-0 in the second half.
Yeah.
I mean, really. You know, I don't want to tell you. De Gea deserves two because, you know, he's culpable, no question, for the first two. But after that, Maguire's supposed to be the captain. I mean, where did that go? Martinez just he shouldn't have been playing.
What happens next? Obviously, like Ten Hag was asked, wasn't he, are you going to bring in players? And he said, yes, we need to bring in quality. But they're chasing Arnautovic, they're chasing Rabiot. That's not going to make any difference in this sort of game, Jan, is it? They are in so much trouble.
Not at all. And I speak with agents all the time and they tell me about how they go along with the transfer. It's unbelievable. It's the way that if you get a player in, if you try to recruit a player, it should be a consequence of hard work, recruiting and everything. And you look at the clubs around them. And I've been the last 2 days, I've been by Manchester City, seen the facilities, seen how they work, seen what they do as a club. And I mean, it's like, unbelievable ahead of Manchester United now at the moment. And I think that sometimes these discussions about Glazers out, I won't have any clear opinions of that because they've spent money. But still, I think maybe, and like I said in the first, that some people are hidden behind that because there is a lack of culture at the club. There is a lack of performance culture. And you may say that is the responsibility of the owners to put in the right people to do that. But if you have a look at Manchester United now, who should they bring who is available at the moment who can do their better? I mean, can you imagine the guys in charge sitting there now and thinking, okay, we got an agreement with Rabiot's mother now. Maybe we should get an agreement with their son as well. And it's like everything around them is silly. When you heard about Arnautovic, I swear, I was certain that was a joke. I thought it was someone having a go, and suddenly it was true, and then they checked that it wasn't trending on Twitter, and they didn't sign him. I mean, you can't believe, is this Manchester United, or is this my local club in Norway playing the sixth division?
It's farcical, and it's also difficult to paint any sort of positive picture going forward, isn't it?
Well, there isn't, and it really is simple. The recruitment and who's responsible for the recruitment, this is where it all lies. You know, because at the end of the day, you can say all you want about the Glazers, but as far as buying players, they spent the money. Unfortunately for everybody else at United, they've hired the wrong people to spend the money.
Right.
And it's really simple and straightforward. Listen, you go back to Fergie's first year at United. He inherited a set of players and he had 6 months in his first season with them and they finished 11th. It tells you, if you have players who are not capable, then it doesn't matter how good a coach you are. And it took Fergie 5 years. And there was only one player left from the group that he inherited that actually won the Premier League, and that was Brian Robson. The rest,
right,
straight out the door. So this is pretty straight.
But that's easier said than done.
It's just a fact.
But you can send the players out the door, but if you've got no one coming in, then what do you do?
But you got to start again. You got to start again. And that means that the expectation has to drop from everywhere around United. Because nothing's going to change if every single time they step on the field, every man, his dog, fans, everything is piling on and piling on and piling. There has to come a time where it's like, you know what? They're just not very good.
But there's expectation, and there's expectation, isn't there?
But it's going to change until you get rid of the players. It's not. It is really that simple.
How do you do that?
But
you just put them on the curb and hope someone picks them up for free.
I'll tell you how Fergie did it. He got his own young players.
Right.
Now, you could say that was genius, or you could say that was fortunate.
Right.
But that's how he did it. Unfortunately, if you're going to have to buy your way out, number one, you need to get somebody in who knows what they're buying. Mm-hmm. And two, you're going to have to get somebody with a silver tongue to persuade good players to come to the club. And not just players with talent, by the way.
Yeah, you want everything.
Players
with heart.
Heart and soul and hunger and desire.
The problem there, though, Stevie, is that you just mentioned, you said something there, capable players, right? There's a bunch of players in this Manchester United team that at some point over the course of their careers, they have been considered to be capable players. And yet, somehow, when it's gotten really tough, really difficult, this quote-unquote capable players have disappeared, or they have sort of gone into their own corner and taking care of me first, and then we'll worry about the team second. You're never going to get out of this negative spin until you get this group working together.
Go on, Jan.
Now the problem, boys, is that there's a lot of problems, but this is a part of the culture. What the players do, how they act on the pitch, that is a lack of performance culture. And yes, we can talk about Sir Alex Ferguson, what he did, but he was one of the greatest managers ever, you know? And that is a long time ago, but it's easier to compare it with Liverpool, their arch rival at the moment. And if I may say, I read in a book from Pep Blinders, the assistant manager now, and he's talking about how they build up Liverpool, how they're building up their recruit department, for example, in the Portugal market, when they get Diaz, Nunez. And Manchester United want to get Rabiot and Arnautovic. And you may say, well, that is the last 2 weeks, but what have you done before? Ten Hag has known that he's going to be the Manchester United manager for a long time. You think that he's probably talked with these people and said the players he wants. And maybe the recruitment department will say that he wanted only Ajax players, Dutch players, or player he once managed. Fair enough as well. But they haven't got them either. Ajax player has been all around Europe. I haven't seen the best, none of them, going to Manchester United. So for me, it doesn't matter, and Al said it right. You had Sancho playing in Germany, did great there, and you may say, yeah, but there was an easier league, and okay. But everybody coming, getting worse. Then there's something wrong with the culture, and it doesn't matter who you have as a manager. I mean, the only one you think of in your head now is Conte. Maybe he could do it, but what has Conte done at Tottenham? He has come in and made Juventus of London. So he's taking his players as well. Maybe he would have done the same at Manchester United. Maybe he would do something. I don't think there is something wrong with Ten Hag. I don't think we should say the juror after two games that he is useless. Because some way, after Sir Alex Ferguson, more or less all managers have been useless. So maybe there is something wrong with someone else.
The good thing is, though, for United, is that their City rivals are really struggling at the moment. Manchester City, of course, in action against Bournemouth, 4-0. This was an absolute cruise for Pep Guardiola's side. Jan, you were there. Tell me how good Kevin De Bruyne was today.
He was unbelievable. I interviewed him after the game and I called him the Belgium dancing queen. I mean, the way he was just dancing through it there and how he described it, how he looked for movements, and then he decided I would score it and he make everything so simple. I mean, this is one of the best players in the world. Mm. And yes, we all rate him, but maybe because of his... he's not a typical superstar for you. So he will never come up big time in these great awards that Craig Burley loves. But he is fantastic. And the way Manchester City did it today against the five-man backline at Bournemouth, it's hard to come through. But in the first time, they did exactly what they should do, being patient. There was a ball possession of, I guess, around 80% that they were just hammering. They were just going there and they got more and more tired. And Scott Parker told me after the game, well, what can we do? Mm. We can't get hold of the ball, you know? And that is Manchester City at their best. And Manchester City got 6 points now. Liverpool got one. And we may say this is after two rounds. Yeah, but you know, I'm just saying, because we've seen the last years that it's been one or two or 3 points who's decided the
United
championship.
Liverpool haven't played yet, Jan. Calm down. They will Monday.
If you let me end the sentence, I will say that. It's just show you how exciting it is that on Monday they're playing Crystal Palace and you just feel they have to win. That's what we love the Premier League.
Erling Haaland with just the assist today, no goals, Ali, but you were talking before about the impact that he still makes.
Well, his presence on the field forces decisions from defensive players. And in the goal by Kevin De Bruyne, as De Bruyne is going at the defender, Jefferson Lerma, who is dropping off as a midfielder and helping out the back line, is now addressing the run of Erling Haaland, or the presence of Erling Haaland, to the point to where you see him stepping to his right because he knows, okay, Haaland is here, I'm going to block this passing lane. But in doing that, then opens up the space for Kevin De Bruyne to cut to the inside and slap the ball with the outside of his foot. Now, it's a great finish by Kevin De Bruyne, world-class player, world-class finish, but overall, you just see the impact of Erling Haaland just being there. The threat of Erling Haaland being there is going to force defenders into decisions, and that's when you allow then 1v1 situations for everybody else.
It's all just a big nightmare for defenders, isn't it?
Yeah, and the other thing that Haaland does is his runs are the runs of a proper centre forward. Mm-hmm. It's one thing when you've got the invisible nine, or whatever you want to call it,
yep,
and they make runs.
The false nine.
The false nine. Yeah. Can't help it.
But the invisible nine is invisible a great nine. Player too.
I wouldn't mind being that. But his runs are great runs. You know,
right.
There's one thing to have movement, but if they're just airy fairy and all over the shop, then you know sometimes defenders can just let you go. Because you're running away for goal or something like that.
Yeah.
Whereas this guy always runs where he thinks A, he's going to get it, and B, it's the most advantage for the guy on the ball. I mean, it just gets worse for defences in the Premier League.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. He had very few touches today, and it's also that Pep Guardiola says when he doesn't have a lot of touches, he doesn't want him to wander down in midfield because I got, like Pep said at the press conference, I got enough players there. So I think there was one situation that could be is interesting is when Foden doesn't play him when he come one against the goalkeeper, and it's just to take it over to Erling, and Erling would have had an easy goal as a goal getters like. And at halftime, Pep took Foden off. I'm not saying that. That was the reason, but that is quite interesting. Okay, fair enough. Foden wants to score, and he's been there, but a goal getter never likes there. But yeah, De Bruyne as well, his goal, some of his runs. And I think the thing is, when you play with that kind of number nine, you will always get the defenders tired. They will always chase you, and they will always try to double up on the striker because he will keep it, and then they will come after him. So they got 6 goals now, and Erling Haaland got 2 of them and 1 assist. So I think that is a good start for a young man from Norway.
Yeah, and you know, you said something there about Haaland dropping into the middle of the park. Because I couldn't figure out why he took him off. Because I'm thinking, why are you taking this guy off? Well, there's still like 18 minutes to go, something like that. Do you think that maybe is part of the reason? He's taking him off, and then when he gets him in the dressing room, he's going, right, if you keep doing that, I'm going to keep taking you off. You need to stay up front. That's where I want you. Do you think, I mean, is that a reason? Is that plausible? Because I can't think why else you would take him off unless you try to send some sort of message. And is that the message?
I don't think so, Stevie. I understand what you're saying because he didn't go a lot down to midfield today. But I was at the press conference of Pep on Friday, and that was more like a seminar that he tried to understand his ideas and all that. And he said at this stage of the season he doesn't want to rotate a lot because there is just 7 days between the games, and he will keep on rotating. So I think that he's in a stage now that he wants to give players the chance, small chance, like Alvarez. You know that you will need him during the season, so then you will give him some minutes and then he puts it on. Having said that, of course, Erling as a striker would like to stay on at the end because there are some free goals then, or in the first game he wanted a hat trick and he was a bit annoyed about that. But I think that Pep is doing right there. Of course, a number nine will never want to be taken off. But I think it's wise when you know that this is an unbelievable long season. Although there is this World Cup, this small tournament in the middle. But still, to keep it steady because we're just two rounds into the league.
Unbelievable count, up to 4 as it stands. Gabriel Jesus was unbelievable today again, wasn't he, for Arsenal as they beat Leicester by 4-2, Steve Nicol.
Well, you know what, at last, they actually played from the first to the last minute. You know, my criticism, particularly last week, was that...
It's only their second game.
I know. But they reminded me of Arsenal of last year in the first game, where they came out flying, had a spell where they were incredible, but then it disappeared for the next hour. I can't say that about this game. Now, yes, they lost two horrible goals, which I'm sure Arteta will be looking at. But other than that, I mean, they could have scored at least half a dozen. Okay, Leicester were poor, but Arsenal going forward were frightening. And Jesus was absolutely outstanding. I mean, you see, some of the runs he had with the ball at his feet, one in the second half, he just ghosted past three defenders and put a ball across the six-yard box. Unfortunately, there was nobody there to put it away. He himself could have had at least three, maybe four. So, yes, this was a performance from Arsenal pretty much from the first minute to the last. Now, if they can keep doing that, then we can start talking about who do they push out the top four.
Right. Has Jesus surprised you?
No, because I remember saying when he moved that I thought that possibly the change of jersey is going to take the weight off his shoulders. I've always felt that every time he stepped on the field for City, he had the weight on his shoulders. It was almost like he had to prove himself every single time.
Right.
And I thought that going to Arsenal, he could just be free and go and play. And right now, that's what it looks like. I mean, I never saw him going past three defenders so well and just looking so lively and incredible when he was playing for Man City. So there has to be a reason for it. Maybe that's it.
And sometimes when we talk about the importance or lack thereof of preseason, it is important for a player who has made a move like Gabriel Jesus that has now the responsibility of being the guy who's going to score the goals for Arsenal to get off to a good start in preseason. And he did that with Arsenal. Right away, he was scoring goals. So you have to imagine that this is a player that comes into the season with confidence, shows up, scores goals, and now feels like, yeah, that's right. I'm the guy. I was always going to be the guy. Here I am. Why were you doubting me? I think this is important for Arsenal. They look good today.
In my new betting column, I tipped Arsenal to finish in the top four. You can check that out over on the website. I also went for a draw between Chelsea and Spurs in the big game on Sunday. Me and Jan on the same page. Meanwhile, Stevie and Ali going for a 2-1 victory for Spurs. We'll, of course, be looking back at that game on the next edition of the show, so be sure to join us. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
It was a disappointing start for the new-look Barcelona. They could imagine a 0-0 draw against Rayo Vallecano. Rafinha started, as did Lewandowski, but they couldn't find a goal in the 90 minutes. In fact, Rayo had some good chances as well. For more on this, let's go to Ian Dark and Steve McManaman. Boys, this wasn't in the script.
It certainly was. And great performance by Rayo Vallecano. We came to see Lewandowski and Rafinha, etc., etc. But we're probably going to leave talking about those two central defenders, Catena and Lejeune, for Rayo Vallecano. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is, and I suppose the question is, was that teething trouble with the new team or Barcelona still not good enough?
Well, I certainly think it's the latter. I just think they're not good enough. Yes, they've got a host of new signings. Listen, I love Lewandowski. I think he's world class. But a lot of the other signings didn't... Kunde's a good sign, but they haven't registered them. But Rafinha, I'm not that bothered about. Kessie, I wasn't that bothered about. You know, people like that. Christensen, I wasn't that bothered about. Yes, Lewandowski is an upgrade. But you see how many players they used today. They were packed on the bench, absolutely stacked with internationals. They brought five on, and they still couldn't do anything. The game management was poor. They were slow. There was no urgency at all. Yes, it's very, very warm tonight. It's very warm, and that is.
They're used to that in Barcelona.
Well, exactly. It's the first game of the season with new signings, with a full house and an expectant crowd. There was no tempo at all. I was really disappointed in them. I really was today.
I did agree with Ali there. I thought Busquets was badly done by there.
Yes, you're right,
it was a yellow card. Then maybe you could give the foul. He was shielding a bit too robustly. But for that to be a second yellow and him to get a red card, I think they've got that wrong, haven't they?
Yes, very much so. I didn't think the referee was very good today. And, you know, I've played the game, of course. So has Ali. And I totally agree with what he said. We said it in commentary. Yes, he's shielding the ball. He's not looking at Falcao. It's not a swinging arm. Yes, he does catches it. And there was a little bit too many theatrics today on show from the Rayo Vallecano players. And I get the fact that they're falling down because they're trying to time waste to see the game out. But the referee fell for that one today, really, off Falcao.
So a bit of pressure. I don't think he's going to enjoy the headlines tomorrow morning, Xavi. All the players, disappointing debuts, really, all around. Kessie got a bit of an injury. There's the Busquets red. So next game, away to Real Sociedad. They've got to start performing. Back to you, Dan.
Jenna, before we let you go, we've had quite a few complaints that you're not wearing your jackets.
Oh, no.
It's a Turkish bath here.
Thank you very much, boys. Go and cool off. Ali, we talked.
What you can't see is that.
Go on, Matter.
I was saying, what you can't see is that there's people below us here with fans blowing on us because it is that warm.
So just palm trees.
We've got a device. We've got a device here.
Some grapes.
It's like the thing from Apollo 13, you know, when they needed enough oxygen to re-enter the Earth's atmosphere. It's a bit like that.
What?
Brilliant. I love it. Thank you very much, guys.
What's so fascinating, I mean, we talk about this a lot, is pre-season and how it's a false dawn.
Yeah.
And no one epitomised that more today than Dembélé.
Yes. And this is a sort of player that is so very frustrating because you see him for a couple of minutes, for a couple of plays, for a couple of sequences, and you say, man, this guy is something special. And that's what happened in preseason.
Yep.
You see, well, this is the version that Xavi has been able to get out of Dembélé. And so therefore, what we're going to see from him is his full potential. And his full potential is a very, very talented player. But has he been productive with consistency with Barcelona? The answer is no. So until we see it with consistency, not towards the end of the season like he did last year. No. The whole year. Let's see it, Dembélé. Here's your opportunity. Here's your chance. Xavi believes in you. Let's go. Let's do this. He's kicking the ball straight out of bounds.
Yeah. Incredible. Well, hit by one of those balls. Alexis and Luis are with us now from the touchline. Guys, you're in a great spot to kind of give us the mood of the fans beforehand. Great, excited. Everyone's looking forward to this new dawn. I imagine that trended down as the game went on.
Yeah, Dan, as we were saying, we built it up so well, talked about the frustration of last year and the disappointment in Lionel Messi going and the excitement this year. And now, once again, we're back to that disappointment and frustration, really, Luis. And I mean, it's absolutely sweltering hot down here. But despite that, this is the second highest crowd we have seen since post-COVID era in La Liga. And they leave disappointed, Luis. What went wrong?
Well, I think that we've been talking and the guys have been breaking down very well. I think that the ball wasn't as fast as it should be. It was no urgency. We could see the center by just passing the ball to each other. We never saw them with the intention of going forward to try to make the defenders or midfielders of Rayo Vallecano to do something. And at the end, it's about the ball going into the net, the back of the net. That's the only thing that matters. I think the Barcelona is not the best performance. Of course, it's the first one. I think there's still a lot to work on. But you could see that there is an idea. At the end, the chances are right, but you didn't finish them. And that's something that you should be concerned, but it's not something that is going to worry the Xavi's or the players, because when you don't have the chances, when you have to be worried, when you have to be concerned.
Yeah.
But today there were a lot. We saw Ansu Fati shooting, the chances, Lewandowski Dembele. Chances, Dembele, Rafinha, all of them had chances. Mm-hmm. They didn't score, but at the end, they were there. And there is not all the games are going to be like this during the whole season for Barcelona. Four players in front of the box and another four players in front of the box defending and go for the contacts. They need to get used to this. Hopefully they can do it quick, because if not, again, we are going to get disappointed very, very often.
And speaking of disappointment, because you talk about the chances, we know that Barcelona can create a lot of the chances too. And the fact that they brought in Robert Lewandowski, he seemed to be that missing piece to get on the end and for sure score all of these chances, so to speak. We talked about it last year and we saw how Kun Agüero almost helped them before, of course, he had to retire. But still, why not tonight for Lewandowski?
Well, I guess, his first game and the anxiety, the people get nerves, even though that is
very experienced.
Yeah, very experienced, but it doesn't matter. The year you come here, 80 plus 1,000 people into the stadium expectation is something that the players need to deal every single weekend. And it's not easy when you're in front of the goal. And I think that I saw that in Rafinha in the first half. He wants to score so much that he's trying to put the ball in the best position, try to score the first goal, because that's something very important. And then you kind of release all that tension, all that pressure that you feel. But sometimes you got a backkeeper in front, you got players in front, and it's not easy. So I think that's what happened tonight. All of them wanted, but it wasn't enough.
Rafinha definitely was trying very hard. He's had some pace on him, almost fell over our side and fell on top of us a couple of times. Luis was going to offer him a seat to sit beside us, but he wanted to get involved. Someone else who wanted to get involved, of course, is Dembele. We spoke about him and how highly you rate him, you know, despite all the other big glittery names on this Barcelona squad. But you heard Ali almost have a little
they love,
at him
they
there.
Love a fight. They love a fight.
Oh,
the first thing that they start talking when they were going to throw to us a retransmission, it was, no, Dembele, you know, yeah, there you go, you got the chances. Listen, guys, it's the first game, take it easy with Dembele. He's a fantastic player, as you're going to show. Last year, it was great. Today, yeah, maybe we can say that he wasn't the best on crossing, on finishing the game. But if you see what happened on the field, why all the players are looking for Dembele, why all of them, they are rushing to bring the ball to Dembele, that has to mean something. And guys, yes, given time, he's the best player or one of the best players on the field.
Tell him, Luis.
But didn't we give him time before? And isn't this a little bit of the version that we saw of the previous version before he got his new contract? It's got to be a concern, Luis. I understand you're a big fan of his, but you've got to be worried when you've got one of your best players who are as inconsistent as he is.
Yeah, but we are talking about one game. You just guys have been mentioning about the preseason, that he's been good, that he's been in action. Last year, he ended up the season very well with 13 assists in just 3 months, something that no one was expecting. And now we are talking about one game, a game that is not easy. It's Lewandowski inside, Rafinha inside, Kessié came into the second half, Frankie de Jong. And we are focusing on only the Dembele. I think, yeah, it wasn't the best one, but I think the whole performance was the best for Barcelona. So let's give it time. I think that these guys deserve. They've just been training for 3 weeks. Christiansen, Lewandowski, with the uncertainty that they maybe wasn't going to be registered. So all that kind of things, when you are on the field, kind of is an impact for the players. And today, yeah, it wasn't the best one because they didn't score. If they scored the first one, it could have been 2-3 more goals.
Frankie de Jong was a bright spark, though, wasn't
he? The best one. Yeah,
exactly.
The best one in the second.
The one they're trying to get rid of, Luis. Yep.
Yeah, kind of.
They
kind
need
of
to register
like
Koundé.
I think he showed today. He wanted to show, listen, I'm here. I wanted to do something. Look what I can bring on the table. And definitely was one of the best players on the second half.
Former Barcelona midfielder, Luis Garcia. Thank you.
And Dembele's agent, by the way.
Thank you very much. Karaoke tonight, Alexis?
Where is it?
Oh, you know it, Dan. We just can't wait to get out of here to get some karaoke. Luis, now that there's no more, I suppose, lockdown laws here in Qatar, Catalunya. Luis is going to take us to where all the big ballers go, right, Luis?
Yeah, exactly. Now that the guys I know here.
Now that they're not here. Yeah. This is an A team.
Yeah. All right. Go find another lever to pull. Thank you very much to Luis and Alexis.
We're going to activate the fifth lever.
Just a reminder, every single La Liga game will be live on ESPN Plus this season. And Real Madrid kick off the defense of their campaign away against Almeria on Plus at 3 p.m. Eastern.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, after the 0-0 draw, Eduardo Fernandez Abascal caught up with Xavi.
Hello, Xavi.
Hi.
So yesterday people were very happy with all the players able to register, but today what happened? This tastes like a defeat?
Well, of course we need to analyze, we need time to analyze the game. I think we dominate the game, we control the game. We create many chances to score, but we didn't score. This is the, I think, briefing. This is the game, no? But then we must attack better. We should to understand where were the space or the free men to attack. It was difficult, and then Rayo Vallecano did a very tough game. They defend very well tactically, very good team. So it was difficult for us. Of course, it's not the best beginning, but it's a matter of time. We need to continue like that, believe in our game model, and keep going. Of course, it's not enough 1 point. But that's it. We need to keep going and continue working hard.
It looks like in pre-season you were much quicker than today. And in the second half you improved a little bit, especially with Frenkie de Jong. I think he was probably the best player on the pitch, you think?
I don't know. Of course, Frenkie did very well when he started from the bench. But I think we had to score. We had to score. We create many chances. We arrived many times near to the box. We shoot many times from outside the box. So we just, I think, just missed the goal. Of course, we need to play better, but it was for winning today.
Sevilla lost yesterday as well. You have a draw today. Do you think this is going to be a very tough league to win the game?
Sure. The league is really tough. All the games, it's are difficult. Everybody understand very well our game model, so it will be tough. Of course, every game will be a war. So now we need to focus in Real Sociedad and of course analyze the game and in order to improve.
You know that we are ESPN in America. They were surprised because Serginho Des was not even in the squad. This is a tactical decision, or you don't come with him for?
Yeah,
for
just
the rest.
A technical decision. Of course, we have many possibilities to choose players. So. He knows my opinion about him, and this is of course it's a pity because many players cannot play, but this is football, no?
Yes, it's football, isn't it? So Junior Desco from starting last season to not even in the squad. Ali, what struck you from what Xavi was saying there?
He mentioned there twice game model and the way that they like to play. Right. Okay. I have no issues with Barcelona's game model. As long as they execute it with speed, with spade. When you have a team that doesn't move the ball quickly enough, then it becomes predictable. That game model that he's talking about becomes easier to defend because you're not moving that ball with speed, and then you now have speed of movement ahead of the ball. That's where I think Barcelona has to improve, and that's where they got into trouble last season as well. When they become predictable, when everything just it goes from point A to B.
to see. At some point, you have to be able to bypass some lines so that then you can generate those 1v1 situations with Dembele, with Rafinha, Pedri with space in between lines, Gavi with space in between lines. If Araujo is going to sit on the ball, Christensen is going to hit on the ball, Eddie Garcia is going to sit on the ball, then it becomes very difficult to find those spaces, and it allowed Rayo Vallecano to go and close down, to go and press the ball and force turnovers. And from there, Rayo Vallecano created some opportunities. Speed of play has to be the key for Barcelona if they're going to be successful.
If you're sitting in your desk, you're on the phone to your agent saying, get me out of here?
Yep.
And he'll say, well, Manchester United are interested. No, thank you.
It doesn't get any clearer than not being in the squad.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it?
He's got to get away. He's got to play. He's got a World Cup coming up. He might have done enough to get in the squad anyway, but he has to make sure. So get yourself out of there.
It's got to be so tough, Ali.
Well, and I think the evidence in front of Serginho Dest is very clear to see. Today, the option to start as a right back is Ronald Araujo, who is not a right back.
Right.
The option to then come off the bench to play right back and then shift Araujo into the center back position was Sergi Roberto,
okay,
who's also not a right back. I think that tells you, if you're Serginho Dest, yeah, I do not believe that this manager thinks I can play the position at this level. It is very clear to see. You don't have to be an expert to figure this out.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
It was the opening weekend of Serie A. Dumfries very much the hero for Inter, scoring a late winner to give them a 2-1 victory over Lecce. Meanwhile, Milan, of course, the defence of their title, started things with a 4-2 victory over Udinese. Atalanta beat Sampdoria by 2-0. New Boys Monza lost at home against Torino. For a lot more on what happened in Italy this weekend, be sure to check out the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which drops on Monday. That is it. That brings us to the end of today's show. But fear not. Extra time is next, and there's one subject that dominates most of the questions looking at them. And it might just be Manchester United.
Oh, what? No.
Really? Why is that?
Because they're rubbish.
They're not that good.
Welcome in to the latest edition of Extra Time, then. Ali and Stevie with us here in the studio. And it's the weekend, so Jan must be in front of the hotel door.
Yeah, there he is.
But look behind me now, Dan. Look at this one. Look at who's behind me.
Hey! He's watching, always watching. You can't
in
sleep
in my bedroom.
You can't sleep without him, yeah. That's the thing. Hey, no, he's rubbish, no. You can't score. Didn't score today, that's it. What he's done.
That was Pep Guardiola said. He was asked, why was it different, his mood after the first game and the second game? And Pep Guardiola said, I'm not sleeping with him, so how can I know? Oh. So that was also an answer.
There you go. Do you room with his dad?
Nice mum.
Okay, right. Has anyone on the panel ever seen a squad capitulate to the degree this group of Manchester United players has? It seems Ralf Rangnick wasn't exaggerating when he said this team needs open heart rather than cosmetic surgery. It just when you think it's rock bottom, mm-hmm. Yeah. They dig a little more, yes, and lower that more. Bar, don't they?
Keep it's digging.
Incredible. Like, you think of the history of... of those sort of capitulations, like Leeds, obviously, when they had that success and it all went downhill very quickly. But they're not Manchester United, are they?
No, and most teams like that, every now and again, have a little spot.
Yeah.
You don't see that happening with this mob.
No.
It's just all doom and gloom.
Yeah,
it?
Completely.
And the thing is that it's not short term. That's
aye.
That's the really scary part. Is that you just mentioned? Okay. It was as bad as it was going to get. Oh, no, no, no. There is more.
Yeah.
And when does it stop? Is it going to stop against Liverpool? I don't think so. It's going to keep on going, and it's going to get worse and worse and worse until there is really, really significant change.
There's nothing to hold on to.
Nope. No. You're pumping the brakes and
you never made a chance.
No. Yeah.
You never missed a chance.
Yeah.
You never defended. You never fought. There's nothing to hold on to.
There's a lot of United questions here. Jan, I saw guys slate Jose repeatedly, but with every passing week, his claim that the greatest achievement of his career was to get Manchester United to second and to win two trophies is ringing truer by the day. Any comments?
Yeah, I will take Ole Gunnar Solskjaer back in the business.
Hey.
I mean, because I know there's quotes from Jose coming always in that he said that. He is a clever man, Jose Mourinho, because he knows what he's saying, of course. But Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, they were second with him. And then you can say a lot of things about that. I think the Manchester United situation now is so terrible that even that the joke that they are like this orchestra, Titanic, that they're just going back, and they're playing the violin. It's not funny anymore because now the lifeboats are out. I mean, there are lifeboats, and the fans don't want the players to survive. They want new faces in. They got a new captain, but meaning a manager in Erik ten Hag, but that doesn't function either. So there's something wrong with Titanic, there's something wrong with the lifeboats, and so on. So and so goes the joke.
They just put the music up when Jan was talking. It's like the Oscars. Shut him up. Stick that there. Yeah, do you think Ollie is enjoying this?
Absolutely not.
No?
I mean, there is a lot of things you can say about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, but that he is a true Manchester United fan and that he played for Manchester United. He got his hearts there. He showed that as a manager. You can discuss how good that was, how was his buying, how did he organise his team, but he got a Manchester United heart, so he's not enjoying this at all.
Is that not a human little part of you going, no?
No.
That would just be me.
Hey, that says a lot about you, Dan.
I know. If they sacked me from this show, I wanted to fail. I don't want to go. That is it. I don't care.
Well, it's good to know that, Dan.
Stevie, how many goals will United concede against Liverpool and why is it 8?
Oh. I actually started thinking about that for about 2 seconds.
What's in the sky?
I know. But it's really way up there.
I actually went there.
Right.
In my head.
Right, the sky.
After the final whistle, and then I realised that the next game for United was Liverpool, I actually went there thinking, oh my goodness, this could be. And then I went, right, oh, hold on.
Right. But it could be.
Dan, everybody knows how it would be now for the tabloids in England. They conceded 2 against Brighton, did they, Manchester United? And now 4 against Brentford.
Yes.
You're up in 6. So they will concede 10, and the tabloids will say, Eric 10-0. You know that will come.
Oh,
you know it.
Goodness me. What number are you going for, Jan?
Pardon?
What number?
I'm living in which room? The hotel room.
How many goals will they concede against Liverpool?
2 plus 4 plus... No, I'm not saying... I say that Manchester United will get a result against Liverpool.
Well, yeah, they'll lose, but that will be the result, won't it?
No. They will get a good result. I say that. You'll see that. Next Monday...
Why?
I will
Why
be there
you,
fresh.
What have you seen, Jan, that gives you any sort of... confidence that will happen?
Because it can't get worse. That is the most positive news.
I felt like we said this before when Liverpool played.
No. We saw Liverpool at Fulham. And if Manchester United do like Fulham, which is very, very unlikely that they will fight hard and win tackles. No, but I got a feeling. But the danger I have on that game, 8 days before it happened, people just be aware of that game because I think you will have demonstrations. I think that what you saw in the first game, that is just a start. I will say that this is a dangerous game. There should be some red flags up there because the Manchester United fans are, you can see that all over the place. They are after someone. So I think this is going to be a high-risk game, but I still think Manchester United will get a result, good result.
For the boys, Ali, mm-hmm. if you represented Frankie de Jong, mm-hmm. would you sanction him going to Manchester United, even if they paid all of his back wages and promised a ridiculous salary?
I mean, I just, as an agent, and I'm representing my player, I have his best interest in mind, or at least I should.
how right now do you present Manchester United as a possibility and have your players' best interest in mind at the level of Frankie de Jong? I don't think so.
Not a chance.
No? Not at all?
No. No.
When you played, did you have any empathy for your rivals? If they were struggling, or did you enjoy seeing your rivals being rubbish like Manchester United and Everton? I think I know the answer to this. Did you ever feel sorry for them?
No, you're kidding.
When Liverpool, you were thrashing teams week in, week out.
Not a chance. No. I actually spoke to somebody. Somebody was doing an article on the 9-0.
The Crystal Palace game?
Crystal Palace game.
You scored twice?
I scored twice.
And okay,
they
Steve.
And they were saying, you know, at any stage, did you think, well, you feel bad for them,
right,
or should you hold up, or... And the answer is no. The biggest disrespect mm-hmm. you could have given, or we could have given Palace, was to start passing it around and taking the mick and doing all that. The respect we gave them, there was a we kept going and we played our game regardless.
Jan, did you ever feel that teams were very sympathetic towards your struggles?
Yeah, I wanted to say you took my joke, by the way, because that's what I felt that everybody should feel sorry for me and my team. But now I'm just, of the big losses, and I told this story before, is that when we lost 7-1 to Newcastle and we came back and our captain, Sean Taylor, said Andy Cole didn't score. And I told him that every beep-beep other players at Newcastle scored in that game. So I never felt that I felt sorry for them. But I agree with Stevie. That is about respect. Remember back in the days when Germany beat Brazil in that final? Mm. And after the final, it was 6 or 7 up. And then the German players kind of said in the media that they felt sorry for Brazil and they kind of slowed down a bit. I mean, that is so much lack of respect. I don't know where even I could start.
For all, what was the worst result you had as a player at half-time? What was said and what changed in the second half, if anything?
I think we were 5-0 down.
Wow.
At Blackburn. I was playing for Sheffield Wednesday. I think I've told you this story before. The day before, I thought I wasn't even going to be in the squad. Mm. I'll tell you that. I was in the squad, but I thought, there's no way I'll even be on the bench.
Right.
So I went out on Sunday.
As you do.
On a Sunday, I had about 10 pints.
Right.
Got to the game.
Of course.
And I was on the bench. I'm like, well, I'm on the bench, but there's no way.
Yeah.
Anyway. We were 3-0 down after about 25 minutes. And David Plate looked along the line and said, Steve, go and get warmed up. And I was like, ah. I was like, you choked. Oh. And I went on.
Right.
And we ended up getting beat 7-2.
Okay.
We actually drew the second half 2-2, I believe.
There you are.
And actually did all right. But... yeah, that was a bit of a shock.
Weren't you in charge of the Revs when they were 4-0 up once and it finished 4-4? Or have I made that up?
No, I was. Philadelphia away.
Right.
I also called that as well at half-time.
Right, so you're 4-0 up at half-time?
We're 4-0 up at half-time. But I knew that we had... let's just say we had a creaky defence.
Okay.
And I've walked in and so the coach's room in Philly, you've got to walk through the dressing room to get to the coach's room.
Okay.
And I'm walking in and half of the team are in, they're all like this, oh yeah, you know that, right?
Right.
And I walked in the other room and I shut the door and Remy and Miles were already in there and I shut the door and I went, right, I said, by the way, this isn't over.
It's inspirational talk
and
there.
And they went like that. Wow. And I'm telling you, I said, hey, we need to make sure we start second half because we are well capable.
Right.
Anyway, we drew 4-4 and then the last minute, they should have had a penalty. The ref never gave it. We got a point.
Wow. So what did you say to them at half-time?
Yes. Inspirational stuff.
Well, it's really funny because you go in... because when you walk in the room, right,
yeah,
everybody turns normal. And you're, that's why I'm saying... I knew this was far from over.
Right.
But of course, when you open the door again, you walk out, you're like, right, hey, right. we've got to do exactly what we did, we've got to do that. And then of course, then the bell goes and then they all go out. And then once everybody's gone, you're like, ah, oh, please.
Please. Exactly how it is.
Oh, man. Yeah, what was your worst result at half-time?
I'm not sure if it was the worst result, but I remember playing for Norway under 21 in Romania. We were 2-0 down. I was lone striker. And at halftime, the coach took me off and we won 3-2. So that was nice for a 7. That was very nice for an 18-year-old. And you were sitting like, and the next day you were watching the A-team play and you were sitting there and thought, where did I end up here? So I think that was a saddest appearance.
Ali?
We were losing 4-0 at home World Cup qualifier against Brazil. Now, mind you, we actually were playing really well the first 10 minutes or so.
Oh.
We had chances.
Oh.
We were looking good. I was comfortably seated on the bench in this particular game. And as the game, all of a sudden, we lose the ball in a bad area. Kaká goes running. Goal. Robinho, Neymar, Kaká. Goal, goal, goal. 4-0. And now, the fans in Venezuela thought it would be a great idea that every time the Brazil got the ball, they were oleing us.
Right.
So our home fans, every time Brazil got the ball, they were oleing us. And every time Kaká had the ball, everybody was clapping.
Oh, lovely.
So it was a great environment to then be told by the coach around halftime, Alejandro, you got to go warm up. And much like Stevie, I'm like, what? Plus, it's not like you're coming into
it. 10 pints.
No, I did not. But it's not the environment that you want to come into, not only because you're losing 4-0. It's not like me coming in, now we're going to combine and score a bunch of goals.
Right.
No, we're still going to play with one striker, and it's just going to be me, and they're going to be knocking the ball around me, and that's exactly what happened. It ended at 4-0, though. So,
right.
Much like Stevie, made a difference. Yeah. Made a difference.
So, a lot of questions about Manchester United.
Bournemouth did the same today. I thought that was brilliant for the Bournemouth fans. In the first half, when Manchester City had a ball possession of 110%, as Don Hutchinson would have said it, and then suddenly Bournemouth got the ball and their fans started doing ole, and they're like, ole, and they had three passes, and then it started all over again. That was brilliant humour.
Very, very cool. So we had a lot of questions about Manchester United. Also, a lot of people writing about Arsenal. To you, Stevie. Yep. Earlier today, Stevie said if Jesus plays with this good form, Arsenal could make top four. Is he having a change of heart towards Arsenal? And if so, should he just pay Dan his $50 now?
Well, there's no way I'm paying you $50 anyway, regardless.
Oh. What do you mean? We had a bet.
What about a bet? I mean, because it's not happening. I mean,
oh, I see. Oh. Arsenal aren't finishing top four.
If you end up right, I'll pay you your money. Aye.
Okay.
But it's not going to happen.
That's going to hurt, by the way. That's going to hurt.
No, listen, Arsenal, I've absolutely got everybody thinking that they're capable.
But they're not going to finish top four?
I don't think so.
Why?
Well, because, as I said, playing well at home in this game from the first minute to the last minute is a fantastic start.
Right.
But now they've got to keep replicating that. Not just at home, but away from home as well. So to get in the top four, you're going to have to pick up points away from home.
Mm-hmm. Well,
away from home.
What did they do in the first game?
And away from home, they haven't played from the first to the last minute.
But what did they do? Did they pick up points in the first game away from home?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, tough place to go, Palace. Now.
Oh, it's Liverpool, Palace. Oh, no! That is it. We're good, Jan. Thank you as always. We'll be back tomorrow to reflect on Chelsea against Spurs. And Real Madrid are playing as well against Al Madrid.
Hey.
On the defense of their title.